this is the control tower. May I repeat your mission? In 30 seconds, you get into the combat zone. The target for you to drop bombs are Alpha, Victor, CBS, Sony, Toshiba, EMI, Columbia, Crown, Polydor, Canyon, RVC, Wana, Pioneer, King, Japan, Palista, Disco May, Trio, Takuma, Kitty, SMS, Polygram, Pass, 4Life, Epic, Sony. And may I repeat your mission? Bomb all these and destroy them. Over.
Disconnection. Connection.
And we're back again after a little bit of an extended hiatus. Lakeshore Record Exchange's AlternativeMusic.com podcast has returned for episode number 27. I'm host Andrew Chinesi, shop owner, here with my faithful co-host, Rob Roberts.
Hello.
Good to see you in the new year.
Happy New Year to you.
Same to you. We've got, I think, a nice show lined up for you this week. Two new pieces and two old pieces that we'll play for you. And before we get into that, though, we have a little bit of music news.
Oh, all right.
Since it's been a little while since we did our last show, there's a few things that have happened. Unfortunately, most of them are negative.
Nothing with Susan Boyle, I hope.
No, Susan, I think, is doing well, but we start off the news by mentioning, I think we'd be remiss without mentioning that Don Van Villett, otherwise known as Captain Beefheart, has passed away.
Sadly.
The age of 69 due to complications from multiple sclerosis. What do you say? I mean, what can you say? He's a pioneer.
Yeah, and his music was unique. Nobody was like him. Nobody probably will ever be like him. I mean,
right.
A lot of people take ideas from him, but Captain Beefheart wasn't original. More original than Zappa, too, I think.
Yeah. More another artist that I think many contemporary artists or more popular music artists will cite as an influence, though you would never know.
Yeah, I know.
From listening to them. I remember reading an interview with Andy Partridge from XTC years ago, and him saying that he was a big Captain Beefheart fan. But
well, XTC did a really great version of Ella Guru.
It was really
on a compilation called Fast and Bulbous, where people paid tribute to Captain Beefheart.
Oh, no kidding.
Was like a spot. It was actually the most I've ever heard a band sound like Captain Beefheart. I mean, they had it down. You could tell they really studied the piece, and they really did it well.
Wow. Yeah, it's
But listening to XTC, you wouldn't think their stuff had a lot of Beefheart in it. But
exactly. And just as an aside, if you were going to suggest some place for someone who's never heard Captain Beefheart to start with his catalog of recordings,
of
what
course,
would you say?
You know, it would be Trout Mask Replica, which is his masterwork.
Okay.
But, you know, that's really a hard listen, you know,
right.
Especially if you're coming to it unawares,
right.
You know, not quite sure what to expect.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe Clear Spot might be a little more accessible.
Okay.
He's got some good elements and not so great elements in there.
All right. So that's
stay away from the two that he did for Mercury.
Which ones were those?
Yeah. Oh, man, I can't even remember their names right now, but they were less than great.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. So if you are curious about what Captain Beefheart was all about, our suggestions would be either Trout Mask Replica or Clear Spot. Clear Spot was his first album, right?
No. Clear Spot was like actually after Trout Mask.
Oh, really?
And it was when he was still in Reprise and they were sort of trying to mainstream him.
Oh, no kidding.
But it wasn't a bad mainstream, you know.
Okay.
Spotlight Kid and Clear Spot are kind of more accessible records that are a little bit later. His first album was the one he did for Buddha, Safe as Milk.
Oh, okay.
And then that was followed by actually one of my all-time favorites. He did it for Blue Thumb, and the title is Strictly Personal.
Ah, right. Absolutely.
Strictly Personal, which he always disowned because the producer, a guy named Bob Krasnow, had added all these psychedelic effects to it.
Oh, really?
But I kind of like it for that. You know, it was like it was done in 68 at the height of psychedelia, and there's
right.
all this feedback and these weird panning back and forth between
right.
speakers. But it's a pretty great album, and it's got some great songs on it. Beetle Bones and Smoking Stones, Candy Corn, the original Candy Corn is on
wow.
that album. It's a great record, too.
Okay.
That actually might be a good place to start, too. But ignore the psychedelia. Beefheart didn't like it.
Okay. So there's three suggestions for you if you're curious about what Captain Beefheart was all about. Also in the music news, another person that passed away, a guy by the name of Mick Karn.
Oh, Japan?
Yes, the original.
You know, I don't think I heard that. Wow.
Originally, it started out as the bass player from the group Japan with David Sylvian and the Richard Barbieri and Steve Jansen. And he died just recently due to cancer. He was 52 years old. And Mick Karn's a guy that you might not have known his name, but if you listen to alternative music, you've probably heard him playing one way or another.
Yeah, he had a sort of a distinctive rubbery sound.
Yeah, he was a very prolific session guy. And he played with everybody from Gary Numan and Kate Bush to Pete Townsend and Jeff Beck. So somewhere along the line, I'm sure you've probably heard Mick Karn's bass playing. And once you hear it, it was very distinctive. It was easy to pick out that he was there. And lastly, on our bummer trip, this just happened yesterday, was announced that Trish Keenan, the singer from the group Broadcast, has died.
Oh, my.
That was an album that featured a few episodes ago.
Last year, right. Actually.
She died from complications from pneumonia. So this just happened yesterday. So
that's kind of surprising.
Yeah, three sort of untimely deaths.
Maybe a fourth. Did we mention Ari Up the last show?
No.
Ari Up?
Oh, yeah, we hadn't mentioned that. It had happened, I think, right as we were doing the last show. Ari Up from the group The Slits.
New Age Steppers.
And the New Age Steppers, right. What did she die from? Do you remember?
Don't quote me, but it might have been cancer as well.
Wow.
I'm not positive.
Yes. It's very sad. I mean, it's, I guess, not a great way to start out the new year, but
no.
Maybe with any luck, we've gotten through all the badness and the rest will just be great from here on out. But also in the music news, not to completely bum everybody out, a few positive things. David Byrne of Talking Heads fame and his solo career and working with Brian Eno has a new concert film set to start playing in movie theaters very shortly. It's called Ride, Rise, Roar, and it chronicles his tour from 2008 and 2009 and features David doing much of his solo material along with stuff from Talking Heads and a lot of the pieces that he did with Brian Eno on their recent collaboration album.
Right. Eno isn't on tour, I assume.
No, I know. But the album came out last year, Everything That Happens Will Happen Today. A lot of that is in the film. So that's supposed to be debuting in Europe at the end of January, and then I think in America shortly after that. And I'm sure we'll see that on DVD very soon. So that's something to keep an eye out for. And then lastly in the music news, Tom Waits is releasing a limited edition book of poetry called Seeds on the Ground. And I found this kind of surprising because I remember reading that he was always very uncomfortable with being considered a poet.
Yeah, and a descendant of the beat.
Right.
The beats.
The book, again, is called Seeds on Hard Ground, and it's going to be limited to just 1,000 copies. That's in America and Europe. And all the proceeds are supposed to be donated to various homelessness-related charities.
Oh, that's good.
So that's, I think, due sometime in the middle of February. And that sort of does it for the alternative music news.
Somber music
news. Now that we've bummed everybody out,
yeah.
Let's play some music. I'll go first this week. My new selection comes from, it sounds funny to say it, but you could say an old band because they got their start in 1978. And so this makes a plus 30 years that they've been around.
That's old.
Right. And we're talking of OMD or Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark. There's really two main players in the band, Andy McCluskey and Paul Humphries. Again, they got together back in 1978 and were putting out material pretty much steadily through 1989, and then Paul Humphries left the band, and Andy McCluskey continued on for another 7 years until 96. Then he sort of retired the name OMD. So they never officially broke up, so to speak. They just sort of stopped performing. But then after McCluskey stopped using the OMD name, Paul Humphries started doing some live shows under the name OMD again. So he did that for about 3 years, and he, just doing live stuff. He never did any studio stuff under that name. And then finally, in December of 2005, the official OMD website announced the coming reformation of the group to its original lineup of McCluskey and Humphries, and they were going to be doing some live performances, and they ended up doing something that's become sort of a sore subject with both of us.
A cliche, perhaps, like doing...
of going out, they reformed...
Which album?
Well, they did it twice. They went out and did the entire Architecture and Morality album, and then the next year they went out and did Dazzle Ships, and now they in the website they announced that they were going to finally do a new studio album, which they did this past year. It came out in September. It is called The History of Modern, and it's the group's 11th studio album.
Wow, 11.
Yeah, it's surprising that it surprised me when I was doing the research for this that they've been around for so long. You just think of them, you know, as like a new, quote, new wave band, yet, you know, this is, how many years is that? It's 33 years now that they've been around. Yeah. So it's really a pleasant surprise to, at least I thought of it as a pleasant surprise to hear the record, as they're still OMD, but just with a bit more of an updated sound. Still basically electronic, synth-oriented music with some pop overtones, but very lush orchestral sounds as well. And I think it's best signified by the track that I picked out from it. Again, the new OMD record is called The History of Modern, and we're going to hear a track from it now called Green.
Got the trend.
from their 11th studio release, The History of Modern. That is OMD, and a piece called Green.
And very OMD-ish.
Yeah, as we were talking while that was playing, it's definitely a case where they don't seem to have missed a beat, even though it was, 1989 was the last studio album, or 1996 was the last studio album, to 2009. That's 13 years. And
wow.
You wouldn't know that there was that huge gap. But a good record overall, if you're an OMD fan, if you're going for that kind of stuff. I don't think it's going to change anybody's mind. That
probably not. No.
Was so. Anyways, that's my first choice for this week's podcast. Robert, what do you have for us?
Okay, I have actually it's the new Brian Eno record. It came out last, I don't know, November, October.
Yes,
it's
October.
Called Small Craft on a Milk Sea, and the big thing is that it's on the Warp label.
Yeah, I was surprised to see that. Was there some? Did they dissolve EG Records? Or?
I doubt it. I mean, that's been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
I don't know quite why he did it, but, you know, it's sort of consistent. I mean, a lot of the stuff, most of the stuff on that label actually probably stems from Eno's experiments back in the 70s.
Sure.
And especially his ambient stuff in the early 80s, which
right.
kind of paved the way for Warp-style music.
And
so it's kind of an inevitable thing.
So the album, is it more song-based or long
pieces? Actually, no. It's, well, first of all, I think it's around his 40th album, if you count all those...
Wow.
Count all those online records that he offers
right.
on his site and stuff. It's like, he's up there in quantity.
Yeah, he's a prolific guy.
And basically, it's... Which is a good thing, I might
right.
add. You know, I always like prolificness.
Sure.
But it's basically a collection of 15 instrumentals, and I don't know, the general tenor, they sort of vacillate between sounding like the instrumentals in Another Green World and another record he did in the early 90s. Do you remember NerveNet, which had
yeah.
sort of a mutant electro jazz
yeah, yeah.
type thing going? It sort of falls in that range.
So they're all tracks. Instrumentals?
They're all instrumentals. He collaborates with two guys, one guy named Leo Abrahams, I believe, is a guitar player. I don't know him very well at all. I've just sort of seen his name. He's been with Eno for about 7 years now.
Really?
On different recordings, and he's worked with everybody from Brigitte Fontaine to Christine Aguilera, according
wow.
to his website. Yes.
Okay.
And he also works on a lot of the Eno projects, like that Paul Simon record that he did, that type of thing.
Okay.
You know,
right.
Eno produced. And the other guy that he's playing with is a guy named John Hopkins, who seems to appear a lot with Leo Abrahams on other things.
Really?
Hopkins has had 4 albums on his own.
Right, right. I know that name.
Abrahams is on all of them, I believe.
Oh, okay.
So, anyway, Small Craft on a Milk Sea. It's an enjoyable record. There's nothing out of the ordinary if you followed, you know,
fan,
you know,
right?
it's like
okay.
you might like it, you know, you might be tired of it. I don't want to diss it with false praise. One of the good things I like about it is that it's programmed well. You know, just when you think the album's sussed out, you think, oh, it's going to be like a nice, relaxing album, you know, the first 3 tracks, or it's going to be a boring, relaxing album. Then
right.
all once he hits you with some aggressive tracks, which,
really?
which is nice, you know,
okay.
keeps the listener on their toes. It could have probably been a little more interesting if he did have a few vocal tracks
right,
on it.
Right,
right. I like when he does that. You know, one of the things about Another Green World, I think there's 4 vocal tracks on the album.
Right.
But it, you know, plays through nicely. You know?
Yeah,
it gives
yeah,
it
sort of the
little
same
more variety. But
Before and After Science is like that, too, isn't
after,
it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like that. Anyways, what we're going to hear is a track, one of the more aggressive tracks. It's called Paleosonic. It's probably the noisiest track on the album. And, you know, it's got some nice guitar work on it, some feedback, some clattering electric percussion. It's a good mix of sounds. So
okay.
Here we go, Paleosonic. We'll be right back. There you had it, Paleosonic, Brian Eno from Small Craft on a Milky Sea. It gives you a good idea of what the more aggressive instrumental tracks
okay.
are like.
All right. And it's sort of interesting, too, serendipitous, I guess you'd call it, that you picked that for your new one this week. Is mm-hmm. I've got a track from David Byrne for my older catalog pick of the release of the show this week.
Uh-huh.
Second half of the show, Robert and I go into our own libraries, pull out something that we feel should get some additional attention.
That you should hear, yes.
Yeah, that you probably a lesser known piece from the newer stuff that we play. But the album I've chosen is by David Byrne. I believe it's the first solo thing that he did while the Talking Heads were still a ongoing concern. It is a soundtrack, or actually the score, from a Broadway production called The Catherine Wheel. Now, there was a TV special about the making of the Broadway production.
I remember seeing that, actually.
And I've seen, you can buy a DVD of the play or the ballet, whatever it's considered.
Right, right.
I still have no idea what the heck it's about.
It's about dancing.
Right.
You know.
There's supposed to be sort of an underlying narrative there, but it's over my head, is I guess the only thing I can say. The the score CD of the Catherine Wheel is really nice. It's long, 23 tracks long. It's a little over 75 minutes, and it's one of those things where all the songs flow into each other.
I think it's one of the best things David Byrne ever did on his own.
Yeah, it's almost like one continuous piece of music.
And he worked with Eno on quite a
right,
bit of this, too, if I'm not mistaken.
On the disc, he works with Eno. Adrian Belew appears on a couple of pieces. Also, Jerry Harrison is on there, amongst some other people. But the only thing I was able to take away, and this is from reading the production notes for the play, is that the ballet, I still don't know if it's considered a ballet or a play.
I think it's a ballet.
It has something to do with showing a comparison between the dissolution of the nuclear family and the detonation of nuclear weapons.
Okay.
And the album, the soundtrack score, is mainly instrumental music with a few, like say, four or five more traditional, like pop type songs thrown in. So what we're going to do is we're going to play three tracks from the soundtrack. This is how the whole thing starts out, and I think it gives you a good a good sense of what the whole soundtrack is like, in that there's two instrumentals and one sort of typical pop tune. So we're going to hear Light Bath, His Wife Refused, and A Day from David Byrne's score, The Catherine Wheel. Thank you. There you have it. Three tracks, actually the first three tracks from the score to the Broadway production of The Catherine Wheel. We heard Light Bath, His Wife Refused, and A Day. And as you can see, as I mentioned, the whole thing sort of flows together. So it's the whole disc is, you know, about 60 minutes more of what you just heard.
Right. Very pleasant. It's been a while since I heard it. Sounds good.
Yeah. So that's, again, David Byrne in the score to The Catherine Wheel. That's my archive pick of the week. Robert, what do you have for us for your...
Well, you know, we've got this Eno connection going, I guess.
Yeah.
My archival selection stems from, you know, he's one of my favorites, Robert Wyatt. And I thought I'd play a track from his album Ruth is Stranger Than Richard. It was his third album, solo album.
Really? For some reason I thought this came much later in his career.
No. It was the first one was something called End of an Ear, which a lot of people don't know, which is an interesting record. Then Rock Bottom, which was the one that he did after his accident. And this is the second one after an accident. It actually came about a year after Rock Bottom, and this is from 75. And Eno appears on it. It's a good record. It's not quite as good as Rock Bottom. I think Rock Bottom is Wyatt's masterpiece.
Really? But, okay.
This track is called Team Spirit, and I think it has a lot of Eno on it. Eno treatment. You know how back in those days, Eno was known for his treatments?
Right.
You know, the wash of sound he puts over Roxy Music's tracks and things like that. And so that plays a big part on this. An interesting side note about the song, Team Spirit, the same year it also appeared on Phil Manzanera's solo album, Diamond Head.
Really?
And it was sung by Wyatt, and it's called Frontera and sung in Spanish. A totally different version.
It's the same song.
Same song, but totally different version. And it's in Spanish, and I don't know Spanish, but wow. I think the lyrics are completely different. Huh. From Team Spirit.
That's interesting.
So why don't we put this on, and here you go. Here's Robert Wyatt with a lot of contribution from Brian Eno, Team Spirit.
Thank you.
There you have it, Robert Wyatt, Team Spirit, from his Ruthless Stranger Than Richard album. On that track, Eno's credited with playing direct inject anti-jazz ray gun over the sax solo.
Do you have any idea what that means?
Yeah, I think he just had to de-jazzify the track a little bit. Anyway, but it's a good track, a good demonstration of what Eno's done on other people's records.
And it will sort of tie up this week's episode. Again, to recap, we did Orchestra Maneuvers in the Dark from their new album, their first in 13 years, The History of Modern. And we also heard new music from Brian Eno. And
Small Craft on a Milky Sea.
Yeah, and it's not been that long since his last album, especially if you can see...
No, the one with David Byrne.
David Byrne, yeah. Right, that came out last year. And then we heard David Byrne's solo material from the Catherine Wheel score to the Broadway production, and finished out with...
Robert Wyatt, Ruth is Stranger Than Richard.
And again, as always, we appreciate you listening and spending some time with us. If you have any questions or comments, you can send us an email. The address is podcast@alternativemusic.com. You can also go to the alternativemusic.com website and to the podcast page to see any information about the artists and albums that we played for you through this past program. Again, this is episode number 27. So until next time, I'm Andrew Chinesi, shop owner, and here with faithful co-host Rob Roberts. Rob, do you have any sort of comments? We're in a new year now, and just beginning things for 2011. You have anything to say to the audience of any substance?
Not a thing.
And with that, we will talk to you later.